Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary. Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCPO
106.5
FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
All right, welcome back into the House of Mystery. And of course, I'm Al Warren, the important one, and the unimportant one is over over there, and that's David Rose Martini.
Oh, we're back to now it's Rose Martini. Okay.
Yeah, I'm switching it up. I almost think that sounds better. It's kind of like the old classic 60s singer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'm in a good mood because it's you know what month it is now. Hey, it's Cocktober. It's always going to be. Got to do a Cocktober. Now, if the only thing that I I went up to the store because, you know, the beginning of October, it's always exciting because Count Chocula cereal comes out.
It does.
Yeah, and it's just limited. But, you know, I'm really upset. They've decided that they're going to put it all together. So now it's a monster mash, they call it. And they've got Boo Berry, Frankenberry, and Count Chocula all mixed in the same box.
Ugh.
Yeah. I mean, how rude.
That doesn't sound very good.
Well, I'm going to try a bowl of it later today.
Oh, no.
And if it doesn't work out, they're going to hear about it from me, you know. And now, do you hear Starbucks has decided not to do eggnog lattes or gingerbread lattes this Christmas?
Really?
No wonder people get guns. I tell you, it's just, they're ruining my favorite month because, you know, it's all about me.
It is.
Anyway. Well, on to the important stuff. We've got a writer today, and she's got a new book out. I believe it's a new book out. We'll find out. The book is called Catalyst, Heart of the Inferno, Book 1. And the author is the guest, Nicole Fanning. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, we'll see you at the end of the show.
Already off to a great start.
Yeah, are you still already? Well, yeah, I'm sorry, but some certain things bother me. I have to bring it up because what am I going to do with Monster Mash cereal?
I mean, you could separate them all out if that was really important.
Oh, I don't have enough time. How could I do that? That's terrible. But why would they do that? Why? Why? Anyway, so that doesn't matter. And no gingerbread lattes. I'd say, how am I supposed to get through recording guests like you without my latte?
Who's drinking Starbucks at this moment?
Yeah. Well, I see, that's what, you know, okay, so this is, it's really unfair. Really unfair, you know. Anyway, another day. So I I'd imagine that now. So to me, I don't know what I'm going to say, but I'm thinking, what got you into writing? So you've got, I see two books, but this is book one. So Ignite is a different book, or maybe explain this to me.
So yes, Ignite is the continuation of the story. It's the second book in the trilogy. And what got me into writing is I grew up in a neighborhood that didn't have a lot of kids. So ever since I was a young kid, I used to entertain myself by building these elaborate worlds in my head, and just putting them on paper. And I had a few friends that kind of did the same. So it became like a regular thing for me from a very young age to write these stories. And at the time, I'm going to just completely embarrass myself here, which I'm sure sounds great on your show. But I was obsessed with the A-Team and like the old school A-Team. And I would write my own episodes, even though they had stopped filming and producing the show before I was born. And I would still write my own episodes, and my mother would send them to the producers, which she never did. She just filed them in a trunk for me to read later and cringe the entire time. But I really just started it as a way to, you know, express what I had going on in my head and to enjoy myself. And it kind of always continued. And, you know, when the pandemic happened and we were all at home and trying to find things to do so that, you know, we didn't, you know, take out our spouses or, you know, set the house on fire. I was like, I'm going to do something with this. I have this idea in my head and I'm going to see where it goes. And I kind of wanted that combination between like a thriller, suspense novel, like, and also, you know, to have that romance aspect too. But it, so it's kind of a combination of both of those.
Well, that's an interesting thought. So did you seek psychological help for that kind of growing up?
I did not. I think my parents thought that the psychological help of just writing it out would be good enough for me. But maybe they didn't quite comprehend the traumatizing effect of thinking that I have a connection to the producers of the A-Team that are reading all of my episodes and they're just taking a really long time to produce them. Like, no.
Yeah. I mean, you'll be hunting down, what's that, Mr. T.
Yeah. P.A. Baracus.
Oh, there you go. See, you're right in there. But you know, so if you grew up with a completely in a fantastic world like that, and I use that as the old saying from my day, how do you decide what's real and what's not? And especially in your books.
When you say what's real, do you mean like the world that I'm creating?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like how far can you go? I guess is what I'm saying. Like how do you decide on the perimeters? Because you're saying, okay, so I kind of just create all these stories like episodes for A-Team and you're doing this kind of in the book.
Right.
So where do you draw the line?
So I would say that it all goes back to relatability. I mean, your readers are going to connect with a story that they find relatable. So, you know, your more fantasy authors know, you know, who they are marketing to, so they know that they can create those bigger worlds. I chose to go with a realistic setting of, you know, this is just what's happening around us. So our main character is in the mafia. He is a sixth or seventh, I think, generational mafia don. So his family has basically ruled the underworld of crime. And the way that I chose to set up, you know, how that works in our world is just that the mafia dons that are in this world are managing a level of crime and what he calls chaos to kind of keep everything in balance. So he calls it an ecosystem. So, you know, you have your government officials and your mayors and your senators, and they, you know, need to obviously keep a cap on crime, but they also need to keep some level of crime so that they can keep their, you know, rehab programs and their police force and all their other things. So it kind of is like a necessary evil in our world. And so they have this very close relationship with the government. And the way that the mafia functions is they don't really take a stance on the morality of things. They just think that as a human being, you should have access to whatever you want. and what your government refuses to provide because they've decided you're not capable of making that decision yourself, they're going to provide and they're going to make a profit off of it. So they kind of also manage the underworld. So you have some people that are just out there to see the world burn. They could cause a lot of chaos, and then that mayor who's in charge of the city would look like he's not really keeping things under control. So it's up to our Mafia Don, our main character, to make sure that that gets taken care of quietly and, you know, that there is a manageable level of chaos. So he kind of describes it as that ecosystem, like predator and prey.
Rather well developed in your mind and when you say it. So, or you aren't one of those conspiracy people, eh? Like you're not, you know, like running around with no mask and saying that COVID's fake and all that, are you?
Oh no, we're not. We're okay. Not on that train. No.
Well,
I
no,
do,
it's just,
I yeah. will say, however, that I have some of those people in my family, and that yes, they did kind of give me some ideas for this, with some of their wild theories. But they're not, you know, they're not big fans of my book.
So here you are sitting at home, and where does this come from in your head? Does this, do you have to, are you in a certain place? Are you driving and ideas come to you? Or are you like, where does it come to you? These creative ideas?
I would say a lot of my ideas actually come to me while I'm driving. And I do it as a way to distract myself because I'm not a happy driver. I am, that's the nicest way to put it. I don't like other drivers. and so while I'm just distracting myself in traffic, just kind of thinking about, you know, what could be going on, you know, behind the scenes and how that could be interesting for a reader to read about, and wanted to kind of keep it very, again, relatable to someone where they could be like, okay, yeah, I could see that this, you know, whole underworld of crime would be existing right under our noses and we wouldn't know anything about it because the right people are in charge of keeping that on the down low. But yeah, just, I mean, really, I'll be folding laundry and I'll be imagining a fight scene with my Mafia Don and, you know, petting my dog and thinking about, you know, some dangerous deal that the two Dons are dealing between them. And yeah, just it literally just kind of comes to you as a way of escapism to some extent.
So do you take the people that you don't like driving around and you turn them into characters that you kill off?
Well, since I don't know most of them on the road personally, I wouldn't say no, but I mean, I can definitely, you know, maybe imagine one or
well,
two.
You've got a husband, right? Is he okay?
Yes.
Can we?
He is all right. You know, I have him with cue cards in the other room if I need to, you know, make sure that everybody knows he's okay.
Proof of life.
Right. He's full of life and very supportive. No.
Yeah. Well, if you can put him on the camera and I'll say, you know, if he
blink
can
twice.
Hold a finger up, let us know.
Right.
You know,
you're in danger. Blink twice.
if you need help. Just, wow, that's crazy. No, okay, so that's okay, let's say that's the creative part. It comes to you when you're folding laundry, when you're beating your husband, whatever. what's the craft part? Because everybody, when we get these ideas, different people say, you know, it's from whatever, a muse, or it's, everybody has a different inspiration, let's say. But what do you do, what part of crafting is the most important to you of taking that idea and turning it into a book?
I call that my skeleton. I am a neurodivergent writer. So I like to kind of write based on mood or, you know, kind of all over the place. Again, like if I'm driving home and I'm having a really bad time in traffic, I might have that fight scene in my head. However, you know, after spending time with my friends and being in a great mood or, you know, getting some love from my husband, I might be in more of a romantic mood and want to write one of those scenes. So what I do before I write any story and before I wrote this entire trilogy was I actually sat down and wrote out the entire skeleton or the spine of all three books. So I knew what each chapter in each of the three books was going to be. But I still had that ability to creatively direct how that chapter, how that action came into be, you know, around that chapter. But that allowed me to, again, like I could write 1 through 7, chapters 1 through 7, and then decide, oh, I really feel like you know, I have chapter 13 in my head and I could go write that chapter and, you know, then go back to kind of fill in the spots that are missing as needed. But so for me to be able to have that flexibility and not feel like, oh, I have to write chapter 8 and that's the scene where everybody's being nice to each other and I don't feel like being nice today. So that kind of thing, it takes that away and it allows it to be that escape that like, oh, I'm really feeling this, so I'm going to write this today. But then also still have that plot in the background, which was really important to me too. I wanted there to be an actual plot. I wanted it to be that more of a thriller type story, you know, with the romance as like an umbrella that's sprinkled on top and not the other way around. So when you have something like that, you really do have to invest in what's happening in each chapter and where the story's going if you want to have those aha moments with your readers. So I would say that for me, the skeleton, the spine, knowing exactly, you know, like where you want it to end, the whodunit, you know, how are we going to find the bad guy? Who is the bad guy? You know, there's a lot of questions that are in the books and I like my reader having to ask those questions and then secretly like chuckling to myself, knowing like they have no idea what's coming. But yeah, so I would say the skeleton and the spine are the most important for me as a writer.
Well, do you have an inner monologue when you're writing? Do you hear your characters? Do you hear the prose? I know when I write, I hear voices, but I'm kind of strange. But
I'm 100%.
Is it or is it?
Yes, and I 100% hear my characters. The other thing I started with when I started writing was I wrote what I called the character Bible, where I have a lot of ethnically diverse, personality diverse characters as well. And so I hear all their different voices and I wanted them to each have a very unique voice. So when I hear a conversation, there were sometimes that I'd be writing, you know, one of the bodyguards is Haitian and I'd be writing for him and I'd be like, you know, this really doesn't sound like him and I'd have to take a second look at it. But I could actually hear those people talking in my head. So I would say I'm equally weird. I'm with you, David.
Well, yeah, but he hears voices no matter writing or not.
Yeah, that's true. I mean,
you know, it's like, you know, you never want to meet him alone, I'll tell you. I'm just warning you now, just, you know, no. Always have an excuse. Where did your main character come from? Like, that's Jackson Pace, is that how you pronounce his name?
Yeah.
Who is Jackson Pace then, and where does he come from for you?
So I was kind of influenced by two main sources. I liked there was that mafia romance that was 365 days, is on Netflix. So he's a bit of that character, but that character in that story ends up kidnapping our main character and then giving her 365 days to fall in love with him. And I was like, I like that, but like it's a little Stockholm-y for me. I don't really want to do that either. So I also kind of pulled from this resource of that old, I don't know if it's old, I take that back, Peaky Blinders. It's a TV show in the UK that's also on Netflix. And they kind of have a very similar mafia setup where they are, you know, a necessary part of society. And they're good, bad guys. That's kind of my main character as well. He is definitely a violent, scary, dangerous man. He's not afraid to kill people. He's not afraid to exact justice. And, you know, if you lay a finger on his lady, you're going to lose the finger. But he's also, and he's not interested in saving the world either. He's very much just like, I care about my people and no one else. Like, either you're in his little group of people he cares about and everyone else can, you know, pound sand. So, but he's kind of a combination of that Don from 365 Days and also the leader of Peaky Blinders, Tommy Shelby.
Where do you draw from to get added parts to your character? So like do you actually, like in the scenarios, do you dress up like your characters and act out these sort of things? like some people do.
I do not. Although I think my husband would appreciate it if I did for some of the steamier scenes. I think he'd
be down.
He wants
you to dress up like Jackson?
And not as Jackson, no.
Oh, just, you know.
But for inspiration, I I think that there's so many interesting things that just happen in life in general. And it's kind of like if you took an ordinary interaction and then, you know, boosted it up with some steroids and amped it up 10 notches. So a lot of the interactions that happen are everyday interactions, just a little bit more dramatized.
Don't ask me. I'm a speaker for a living.
Yeah, so. I'm the writer. I'm supposed to know what the word is. But, you know, they're romanticized a lot more. And so it's everyday, ordinary interactions that are just given that twist of flair kind of thing. But no cosplay has happened thus far. But maybe ask me after book three. Maybe there'll be some cosplay for book three.
Yeah. You know, maybe I'll like, you know, I could see your husband with Jake Jackson. That could be good. It's a pretty complicated story in a sense. Not, well, you know what I mean? It's very complex. There's a lot of parts going on here.
Yep.
So you've got a lot of parts going on, and it's, but you seem to have it down in your head about, you know, the bad guys doing things. Like, you kind of have it all organized of how you, why things are happening.
Yes.
So, but under all of that, is there some sort of a message? Like, when you say you've got all three books planned out and you kind of got this all together and you know what's going to happen and where it's going, is there a reason for what goes on in the story?
Absolutely. I would say there's several reasons. On the, you know, just general front, I would say that, you know, there's a line that one of the that Jackson says to the main female character where he's like, nobody is complete black and white. Like, nobody's 100% bad and nobody's 100% good. You know, we each have light and dark inside of us. And, you know, based on the situations we're put in, we have sometimes have to make that split second decision that could, you know, mean life or death for us. And he is kind of just educating her on, like, the world is a lot more complex than these black and white decisions that we tend to say, like, you're either good or you're bad. I love morally gray characters because I think in real life that we all are light and dark too. My husband jokes that I'm a black rainbow because he's like, you can be so loving and so sweet. And then, like, you know, you can be in traffic and have, like, scary road rage and yelling. And he's like, it's just so funny that there's these parallels. And I'm like, I think that's everybody, you know, and if not, I'll just muscle it out of you. But I think the other messages that are there are, even though Jackson is this, like, bad guy and he does bad things, he also just treats the main character, the female character, with, like, the utmost respect. So there is definitely some, this is the respect and honor that can be in a relationship, but you can still have that, like, fun playtime, you know, wink, wink stuff, but while still respecting the other person. So I did want it to have, like, those healthy aspects to it, too. So there's a lot of, like, hidden morality lessons in there. And there's some really good lessons on forgiveness and just, you know, not holding on to those grudges because it benefits no one. But those would be the main three, I think, that, you know, we're not either just completely good or completely bad. Life is more complex than that, you know, that you can have a relationship that has all those kinds of dynamics, but also is respectful and, you know, sweet in that sense. And also that you got to...
Oh, my.
So.
Now, you say Catalyst, you mentioned this, isn't your grandmother's romance novel. What do you mean by that?
I would say that it's... So Catalyst is more of a slow burn. So it takes several chapters for the characters to actually get together, if you know what I mean. But when they do, it's pretty incendiary. So it's pretty graphic when that scene takes place. But at that point, I have made my readers, you know, read 2/3 of the novel. So we're not doing any fade to black here. We're going to give them what they came for. And so in that sense, again, he's in the mafia. So he has some violent, dangerous tendencies, and he's got to take care of business and he's got to be a don sometimes. So some of those scenes are described with maybe a little bit more detail than my sweet grandmother would want to read. Now, Ignite, on the other hand, I will say that in that book, it's the continuation of the story. The couple has been together. Whereas like in Catalyst, they are getting, they're getting off to a start. They're getting to know each other. And so they're kind of in that beginning stage. So Ignite kind of kicks off with a bang of some spice, as we say in the romance world, right away. And kind of keeps that pace throughout the book. But there is, you know, just that whole mystery plot that's happening in the background of, you know, who's after them, why are they after them, what's going to happen next, that kind of thing as well. But I would say it's probably not my grandma's romance novel because she's too sweet. I mean, she bought it because, you know, her granddaughter wrote it, but she's like, I'm not going to read it. And I'm like, I don't want you to read it.
Well, you'd be...
Please don't read
you
it.
You never know. You'd be surprised.
No.
Granny might be...
I don't want to get written out of the will. Oh,
there we go. Now we're getting to it. No, I mean, but Granny's probably at the Rolling Stone concert. Come on.
Maybe my one grandma, not the other one.
You'd be surprised. It's the innocent ones. Catalyst to actually decide that you could write something and actually publish it. You know?
Yeah. Well, I had kind of followed a few self-independent authors that had done it themselves. And I just kind of felt like the story was such a great story that I wanted to see what could go out there. And also, you know, you only live once. And I would love it. It was kind of the same idea as why I didn't use a pen name, was I would love it if long after I'm gone, somebody picks up my book and reads the story and, you know, has this experience or learns a lesson or, you know, maybe just enjoys themselves with my name on the cover. So it was really just one of those, I, as a child, always wanted to see that happen. And then as an adult, you know, with that hard work, with that dedication, with that, you know, commitment to writing, you can actually see those dreams become a reality. And that was something that was really important to me.
Well, what do you hope people get out of your books then? So if someone picks up both these books and reads them, other than the actual story, what do you want them to take away?
I would say, again, like just the scattered morality lessons that are in them. You know, I'd love it if they just had a little bit of escapism. I know that, you know, some of the fictional stuff that I've read in the past, whether it was, you know, darker thriller stuff or it was more fantasy Harry Potter stuff, it just gave you that escapism and that ability to, you know, leave real life, which can be a little bit daunting at times, and just go escape for a few hours and find some sort of happiness in this, you know, fictional world.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com Indeed.com/host.
But again, like, there are some morality lessons that are labeled there. So I would hope that they would see that, again, we're not all just one. We're not all one category. We're very complex creatures as human beings. And to just give each other a little bit of slack, you know, to be forgiving, to, you know, be respectful and, you know, sweet to the people that we love and take care of them. And, you know, knowing that they'll take care of us in return. And also to just go after that, whatever that is that sets your heart on fire. So that's what I would hope they take from my books.
So are you going to stick to this type of writing, or are you going to go to different classes of writing, different genres, they call it? What's kind of your plan?
So right now I'm kind of on this boat. So there's 3 books in this trilogy, but there are 12 books total planned for what I'm calling my mafia verse. So, like, instead of a universe or a Marvel verse, or, you know, it's a mafia verse. And there's 12 books planned for that series. And some of them will, you know, Catalyst and Ignite are pretty chonky books. They're pretty big. They're big girls. But the other books will be a little bit smaller, and they'll, you know, have a different tone as well. Because again, they're going to feature some of our side characters in Catalyst and Ignite as the main characters in these other books. So they'll have a different tone. They'll have a different message. They'll have different things, but it'll still all be interconnected. So I think I'm on this train for the next 12 books, but I do have plans for an actual, like dark thriller that I'd like to write. And then I also have some young adult stuff that I'd like to write as well. That, you know, I would not recommend any young adults read my mafia books. Until you're 18 or older.
Where do you get your influences from? Like, you're into The Sopranos and things like that. I guess there's that new Soprano movie coming out, isn't that? I think that's...
Yeah, I've always kind of had a thing for the bad guys. Even my mom used to laugh at me because as a kid, I watched The Brave Little Toaster and I didn't care at all about the toaster. I was more focused on the grumpy vacuum cleaner. And that was the one I focused on. So I've kind of always been drawn to, like, the bad guys, like the story, the villain, you know, like what's their story. And I find that fascinating because I really do think that, you know, your villains they don't just appear overnight, you know, they have a story too. And we've seen it done with a lot of, you know, contemporary romances and music and videos that are popular now, where we get the backstory of a popular villain, whether that's the Joker and Batman or you know, something else. But there's always that story that's behind it. And I think that's what always fascinated me. So I do tend to like a little bit darker stuff than even my husband likes. I like the scary stuff. I'm everything from Alien to, like, your paranormal stuff. And my husband's like, I don't want to watch that. That doesn't interest me at all. So it's funny because we are polar opposites in that sense. But for some reason, I just kind of always loved the old school, even the UK British gangs, and then, like, Gangs of New York, and, you know, your stories of your old school mafia guys in Chicago and stuff like that. So it's just always fascinating to me.
I'm wondering, has a character ever done anything to surprise you? Have they, you know, refused to do something? Have they just shown up or just gone off the rails?
So I've had this question before, and I would say it's kind of. I am more of a plotter. So again, like, I write that whole thing. I have it all mapped out. But I have had, like, a scene that I never imagined taking place. Kind of as I, let's say, for example, I had written chapters 1 through 7 and I'm working on 13, and then I go back and I'm on 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12. And that in between moment, sometimes there's a scene that just kind of, like, comes out of what I feel a character would say or do. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this would just fit so well. It's been kind of amazing in that sense that some of my favorite scenes were from the chapters I was putting off until the very end, because I was like, I don't want to write this. This is just boring, or, you know, it's meaningless stuff. And it didn't end up being that way. So I've had them kind of more so in conversation and sometimes in a scene, but never like they went off the rails and I had to go fetch them and bring them back. Cause I'm kind of a control freak in that sense. So I've controlled it enough that they may go off the rails a little bit in the little realm that I've created for them, but not so much that I have lost myself. And now I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to finish this book because the character has just gone off the deep end. But a few characters I've seen some more depth than even I imagined for them. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that just tracks, that just fits with, you know, their character. So for sure, I would say that I allow them enough room that they can grow and expand, but I definitely have a clear picture of exactly where I want it to go, especially since a lot of these characters are going to become bigger deals in the novels to come. So there's that groundwork that's being laid sometimes is a little bit surprising, but also like, okay, you can play in this little area that I've given you, but you know, you're not setting a foot outside of that.
You see, Dave, she wears the pants. She's the man. She's in control here. Not like you. Okay. You know.
Admittedly, yes.
Well, but with such, so weirdly, what do your characters mean to you? I guess is what I'm trying to say. You know, because I get a lot of guests that'll say they're like my children, they're like my family, they're like, they'll have these comments about their characters. Do you have that same relationship or is it something different for you?
I'd say it's a little bit different for me. I don't see them as my children. I kind of see them as like, and I've had people say like, oh, your main female character, is that, you know, a representation of you? And I would say no, because, you know, there are parts of her that are a representation of me, but she was a combination of several different people that were influencing me. And also, you know, some traits and some things that I want to be. And also with some of the other characters, like who I want them to be too. So they're kind of like, I don't know. They're like extended family that you like because you don't spend lots of time with them. So I would say if they're related to me, that's probably how. They're like, you know, those, that combination of your favorite friends and family members, and you don't see them that often, but when you do, you immediately pick up it right where you left off with them.
Well, how long does it take you to write one of these chunky girls, as you call them?
So, Catalyst was my first, and I had kind of just started it as a hobby. Like, this is just something I'm going to do to pass time while we're all trapped in the house. And that one took me, Catalyst is about 154,000 words, and that one took me 8 months. However, Catalyst ends on a bit of a cliffhanger, and I knew that fans of Catalyst would find me and, you know, threaten me if I didn't get the second one out pretty quick. So the second one is actually 190,000 words, so it's, you know, nearly a quarter bigger, and it took me 4 months, so it took half the time. But that was at a point that I had established a regular writing habit. So there'd be days that I would, you know, sit down and I would look up and it would be 4 o'clock in the morning. So after a full day of work, I would sit down at 6 o'clock and write until 4 in the morning, and I'd write 8,000 words. But then there'd be days that I would just not be in the mood, but still make myself write, and I'd get like 1,000 words. So my husband actually did the math on it at one point, and he said that, you know, over the last year, because Catalyst took 8 months, Ignite took 4 months, over the last year, it meant that every single day I was at least writing 2,000 words a day. But I would say, like, even with Ignite, I didn't feel like I went at it as hard as I possibly could. I felt like I went at it pretty good. Like, if it was a race, I'd still be the one jogging, not, you know, running, not sprinting. So yeah, it's kind of amazing that it was bigger and took half the time. It was insane.
Well, after writing, do you, like in between books, do you have a way to recharge or relax? Do you take time off, or do you just plow into the next book?
So I was instructed by several of my author friends that you are really supposed to take a break off between books. I ignore that advice completely. And the day that I published Catalyst, I started on chapter one of Ignite. Now, where I would let myself jump around between chapters in Catalyst, you know, and do it at my pace, I wouldn't allow myself to touch book two with the chapter, even if I could see a scene that was in book two. I was not going to allow myself to touch that book until I was done with book one. But that also meant that when I was done with book one, I was ready to write book two. So I hit the ground running with Ignite. But with, you know, Flashpoint that I'm writing now, which is the third book, I took about 2 weeks off. And I was like telling myself I was going to take a month off. That didn't go very well, because after 2 weeks, I realized that the reason I was being moody and crabby and ornery with everyone else around me is that I wasn't writing. I'm just a happier person when I'm writing. For me, I always said that I write for myself, but I publish for others. It really is that release, that escapism, that creativity, that, you know, if I don't get the words of my characters, they are screaming in my head and it's driving me crazy and making me anxious. So I am a much happier, wonderful, sweet person to be around when I'm writing. So it's gotten to the point that sometimes if I'm in a mood, my husband will be like, when's the last time you wrote something? you should go write, you know, just for a little bit. See it out.
It's cathartic.
Very cathartic. Yes.
He's tired of being beat.
I swear he's not tied up in another room, Alan. He's fine.
Please. Wink, wink.
Hanging.
Wink, wink.
Hanging from a rope by his feet. Yeah, I've seen that movie before. Wow. So when you write so much, this is interesting. Can you actually schedule time and say, okay, well, I'm going to write between 10 and 12? And like, can you just do that? Can you say, okay, listen, I'm free this afternoon, I can write and sit down and write? Or does the mood have to be right?
Nope. I would say 100%. I can sit down and write. And like on the weekends, I do a lot of my cleaning and laundering, because I'm one of those OCD, gotta clean my house every weekend kind of thing. I treat my writing like a reward. So I'll go do, you know, clean a whole room and do everything I need to do in that room. And then I'm like, okay, I get to go write for 2 hours. And like the minute I hit the chair, I know exactly what I'm writing, because while I've been doing all those tasks, I've been imagining what I'm going to be writing. So it's, you know, I'm very grateful because I'm on a story that I'm really excited about and I'm excited for the next chapter. So maybe that has something to do with it, that, you know, if your heart's really in it, then you're ready to. And maybe if I wasn't as interested in the topic, it wouldn't be as interesting. But no, I find it really easy to schedule the time. And I also make that a habit too. So I don't care where I am. Every single day, I need to be writing for at least an hour. That's just me as a person. So even if I'm on vacation, I'll be on my phone and I'll be writing like in the car, or, you know, when I'm laying in bed at night, like writing ideas down, writing a conversation that's taking place. So just because it keeps me in that zone. And when I actually am in front of my computer and I can sit down and I can read, you know, the previous chapter that I wrote the day before, I can go in and I can read that first and then immediately like know where I need to be going with the next one.
Well, what kind of atmosphere do you have, like Metallica music playing in the background real loud? And like what do you have a certain setting you have to be in?
No, I like, it really depends on the mood, because I sometimes like electronic music, or classical music playing. And sometimes I like complete silence. So it really just is on that mood. And I think it's about the complexity of the conversation that's taking place. So sometimes if I really need to focus on something, I like the silence. But sometimes if, you know, I need to kind of go with the flow, then getting into whatever mood that is. And I have definitely written some action gunfight scenes to some Metallica music. So I don't want to downplay the Metallica. That definitely has happened for sure. It depends on the mood for sure.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. It's good beating music, right? It's,
yeah. 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 Wow.
How do you like, do you like your fans to get a hold of you? Do you like having interaction with people that read your books?
Yes. That is the best part to me. And I've been very fortunate that a lot of my fans have found and heard from me on TikTok or Instagram or social media, so they can reach out to me. And that's my favorite part. I love getting a text from a fan at 1 o'clock in the morning going, how could you? How could you do this? How could you do this? That to me is like, yes, I have succeeded in my goal as a writer to upset you enough that you want to reach out and yell at me. And I will sit here and take your yelling. And then I'll be like, but you like it, right? It's good, right? Mm.
Well, we'll work on that. We'll get some of our fans to definitely get a hold of you and tell you how much, you know, I love
them. Well, I don't want to take them, you know, away from your benefit.
No. They love to hate me, so that's fine. But come on, they got to share that love to hate. How do people get a hold of you then? Do you have like a website, or how do you like people to send you stuff?
Yep. So I do have a communication form on my website, and that is N as in Nancy, herownwords.com. So not the word in, but just N, and herownwords.com. And I'm also on TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook as well.
Wow.
Well, and Twitter.
Well, of course.
Though I don't really understand Twitter as much. Well, so I'm working.
Yeah. Twitter's not, Twitter's more about crabbing at each other. It's not really as, you know, for me anyway.
Yeah.
I just see a lot of people nagging at each other. I don't see it a really good platform for communicating a book, but that's how I see it, you know.
Yeah, for sure. You know,
so, well, that's fantastic. So it's really interesting. It's been a thrill talking to you and stuff, and hopefully we get to do it again and that. So
absolutely, I'd love to come back.
How was the pandemic for you? Like, you know, because you must have been writing Ignite or finishing it during the time of the pandemic. Did it sort of affect your writing at all, or you just plowed right through that too?
Honestly, it kept me from like the panic of the unknown. And maybe that's, you know, living in that world that you have control down to even the interactions between people, and the injustices that you want to see righted in the world. It kind of just, again, gave me that happy place that I could escape to. So it was good. You know, I'm definitely an overthinker. I think if you are a writer and you hear voices in your head all the time, you are 100% an overthinker. So it was great to be able to control the conversation.
Huh. Well, you know, I just wonder, for you, does it affect the way you write when you've got stressful things going on around outside of you? Like, you know, for instance, the pandemic and all of the stuff in the last couple of years, does it sort of, or do you just totally ignore it and avoid all of the stressful things?
Oh, no. I'd say that, you know, there's definitely some sad chapters in my books as well that deal with loss on a whole myriad of topics. But that pandemic is something that I think you'd be hard-pressed to not have it affect you in some way. You know, whether you lost someone or you know someone that lost someone or you yourself had it. It's one of those things that kind of permeated everything we do. And I think it did kind of create that desire in myself to be like, okay, well, you know, if tomorrow was my last day, did I use it accordingly? Was I nice to the people around me? And what did I leave behind? So I think that definitely affected it. And again, like those sadder chapters, 100%. So there's definitely some, it would be impossible for it to have not permeated my writing in some way.
So you are with Creative Edge. So you are a person of Mickey.
Yes.
Oh. So tell us, what's he really like?
I love Mickey. I liked him from the beginning. I told him that he sent me a text that said the word Coolio in it, and I was like, we're bonded for life now. Like, we're down. No, he's just a really genuine person. And I think that you get that vibe from him right off the bat. So he and I, we were on the same wavelength pretty fast. Mm. And I was like, look, I'm not a shy person, so you can throw anything at me and I'll do my best. But no, he's very dedicated to what he does. And I think he really delivers on what promises he makes in he is always there to just kind of have that, you're a good writer, it's going to be okay.
it's pretty,
very genuine person in and out.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I just wonder, because now it seemed to me like, if I'm right, so you didn't go through a publisher, did you?
No, I published myself.
So that's an interesting take. So you're in this world of self-publishing, and then now you've got a publicist, so to speak.
Yep.
How did you find that? So someone's sitting right now listening, and they've written stuff just for themselves, you know, in their Word document and stuff like that. They've never published before. What can you tell them? What kind of advice would you give them? Like, what would you tell them to do?
Well, I was very fortunate. Mickey and I kind of connected over TikTok. Someone had recommended him to me. And so we connected that way. But I would say advice for a writer looking to get out there, you can't do it all yourself. And you need someone who understands the different medias, the different platforms. Just having that person in your corner, having a Mickey, is fantastic. And so finish your book, edit your book, and, you know, then reach out and find that other resource, because there's so many things as a writer that you are asked to do yourself. I mean, I had no idea that when I started writing, it wasn't going to just be writing. It was going to be writing and then editing and then watching people read my stuff, review my stuff, knowing that they could not like my stuff. And then also self-marketing and, you know, managing yourself and creating that brand, and that there's so many other things that aren't writing, and you need someone else to do those things. Because as much as you want to do it all yourself, you are only one person. So having a resource and someone who is as educated as Mickey is fantastic to have that in your corner. So I would say that, you know, do your research and, you know, figure out what platforms and who your audience is, and then kind of see who's educated in the things that you're not educated in. So expand your footprint in that sense, if that makes sense.
Yeah, do you do that book talk thing or whatever?
Yep.
What is that?
I'm astonished. The success that Catalyst and Ignite has had has been because of book talk, because when I first wrote Catalyst, I was one of those older millennials that had a private Facebook account and that was it. And so I had 300 people that I was able to tell about Catalyst when I first released it. And I had just a few followers on TikTok. And then over the last 4 months, that's grown to thousands. So it's been fantastic. And that's been completely through the readership of the book talk community. And there's just the amazing friendships and connections that have come out of that as well.
Well, I'm an old man, so what is book talk? Like, what? I mean, I know what TikTok is. You go on there and you dance for a minute,
basically, I would say TikTok is short. It's like a short platform where, you know, what we use book talk for is I could get on and I could say, hey, I read this book. This is a quick synopsis of this book without giving spoilers. This was my feedback, my review, you know, in a live video format. And, you know, that affects other people who might be interested in the same things. So book talk is definitely influential on the, you know, the younger generations, and it can make or break a book for sure. Hmm. So,
well, is it a separate program or is it the same one?
Nope, same program. It's just the content. So TikTok allows you to pick what kind of content you want. So let's say you are an equestrian, you know, you love horses. The videos that you like that have horses in them will put more videos that have horses in front of them. So book talk is what we affectionately refer to as, you know, most of the videos, if not all of the videos that are coming up on our platform, and what we're seeing from people, these 1 to 3 minute long videos, are all about books. And, you know, you can even like on further genres from there. So if you like mafia romance, you could click on that. But if you like dark mafia romance, or if you like mafia thrillers, and, you know, the more things you like in those categories, that kind of curates the page that you see videos on.
Wow. See, Dave, we can get on book talk.
Excellent.
Yeah. Dance for a minute to 3 minutes, and
I would be so excited to see that. Just knowing you guys last hour, I'm down. If you get on Book Talk, I want you to follow me because I would love to watch your dance.
Well, I'd love to too. I don't know if I can get out of my chair, but yeah, that's exciting. That's, you know, we learn something new every day. This is amazing.
Yeah, so absolutely.
Well, you know, it's been a great conversation. You know, the book, I guess, that we're really talking about is Ignite, and it's The Heart of Inferno, Book 2, which came out in September. You see, Nikki, you got to tell him he sent me a picture of Catalyst.
Oh, well, yeah, Catalyst is, you have to read Catalyst to, I mean, you don't have to, but you really should, to really get the start of the series, but yeah.
And we've learned a lot, you know, and you must do makeup for your husband to cover up all the bruises and stuff, too. I don't know. It's a good thing, you know.
I feel like he's getting painted in a bad light, but he's
no.
Definitely a wonderful man, and I wouldn't lay hands on him.
I'm sure he is. I'm sure he does all the right things. Well, anyway, our guest today has been Nicole Fanning. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, Nicole.
It's a pleasure to come back.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
The mission has been completed.
The end!
By George, he's got it! It is the end!
I'll see you.
If you're lying to me, I'll be back.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.